And welcome. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on this program as we are going to talk about your money and your finances with my special guest, Stephen Edwards, the author of Quantum Wealth, The Seven Secrets to Peace and Prosperity. Before we jump into that interview, let me remind you that this program, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, comes your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page, radio shows page, because we have nearly 200 programs over there, coming up on 4 years that we're going to be celebrating this program, and something like 32 years of interviewing. So I'm very excited about those milestones as we head towards fall. I can't help it. I'm just glad I'm not living in Phoenix anymore, where fall doesn't mean a thing in Phoenix, although it doesn't mean much here either because we have cool temperatures in the summer, which is one of the reasons why I moved to the Central Coast. Well, today we're going to talk about, I can say your money, my money, his and her money, our money, and we're also going to talk about quantum wealth, which may or may not have anything to do with what you have in your pocketbook. Stephen Edwards, I want to welcome you to our program. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
Thanks for having me, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to start out with some very basic questions here on this program. First of all, let's define some terms, because I think a lot of people, this is where they start, this is where they struggle. And so I think they have difficulty understanding why they aren't better off than they were yesterday. Or as the old political term from the 80s goes, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And I have to say that some people would argue, what 4 years? How about 4 minutes ago? What is wealth? We'll start with that one. From your perspective, from Quantum Wealth, The Seven Secrets to Peace and Prosperity, define that for us.
Okay, sure. first of all, I'll define it in terms that would be more sort of, maybe people would consider more grounded. You know, people talk about being rich and being wealthy, and people get confused about the difference between the two. Being rich is having a lot of money. Being wealthy is having a lot of time. Wealth is not measured in money, it's measured in time. How much time can you spend without having to work? So if you had $60,000 in cash and your monthly expenses were $5,000 a month, you'd have 12 months of wealth. And so, you know, the wealthy, the 1% who control the vast majority of the wealth in the world, think of wealth in terms of being able to plan your wealth for three generations so that your children, your children's children don't have to really worry about money. They understand the principles of making money work for you, whereas the poor and the middle class have been conditioned to believe that you have to go and work for money. And that the harder you work, the more money you're going to get, which, you know, as Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you so far? It's a conditioned belief system. It's a knee-jerk reaction. You know, I ask people at my event, I'll say to them, we're all here it's a three-day event. I'll say we're here for 3 days, and of course, 3 days is a lot of what? And people will say time, and I'll say, and time is what? And the knee-jerk reaction is money. But of course, time is not money, far from it. That's been a belief system that has been conditioned into our societies, the poor and the middle class, since, 3-4 generations ago. And now people just don't even realize that that transparent belief, as I call it, this belief that we can't see, that we're not aware of, controls our behaviors. And as long as we believe that time is money, we'll never have a lot of either of it. Because the reality is, time is not money. You know, a simple analogy I use, you know, can you replace money? Yes. Can you replace time? No. It's one of the few things that is finite. And once we start to put more value on our time, then we can start to leverage our time to enable us to generate more money. So a quote I use quite frequently by John Paul Getty is, you know, he always used to say, I'd rather have 1% of the efforts of 100 people than 100% of my own. So that's a sort of a grounded perspective. But, you know, I believe that wealth really is a feeling. It's a sense of abundance that comes from within. And again, we've been conditioned to believe that if we're going to be wealthy, we have to go do something to have it. We have to go and work hard or achieve something. And the reality is that once we start to feel wealthy, once we start to feel abundant, then we act from that place. And wherever we act from, whatever our intention is what ultimately creates the result. Money is a result. It's not a cause. So if we go out with the intention, we've got to make more money, and you know, I want to have more, then we're coming from a place of scarcity because we think we lack something. And whatever energy we come from or express ourselves from, we create more of. So if we come from scarcity, we create more. If we experience ourselves acting from abundance, then we create more abundance in our life. So the essence is, for me, wealth is an experience, a feeling, an inner feeling. It comes from within. And as I say, if you want to create wealth, it's an inside job.
Okay.
And you know, we have to do it from the inside out.
All right. So we've described what wealth is in your terms. So I'm going to ask the question: what is money?
What is money? Great. So money is the root of all evil.
Okay, then I'm going to get rid of all of
mine. People have that belief at some level. You know, they think that money is a bad thing, or they think that money is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And really, money is simply energy, you know?
Okay.
It's energy. And the more energy you have, the more you can move in the world. So ultimately, if we think of energy like electricity, we store energy. Where do we store it? We store it at a power station. So really, energy is power. So time is wealth, and what is wealth? What does wealth give us? It gives us freedom. So wealth is freedom, and money is energy, which gives us power. So we want to have both. We want to have freedom with power. You know, some people say, well, you know, I could have all the freedom in the world if I just quit my job tomorrow and start working, I'd be free. But no, you wouldn't really, because then you'd have to show up at certain times to sleep and eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have the freedom to choose those things because you wouldn't have any money or any power to make those choices. But what we've got to do is we've got to think of that time, if we want to put it into an analogy of a kind of or a comparison of a commodity, time would be platinum and money would be silver. They're both of great value, but our time is of much greater value.
Well, now, I find that interesting that you used silver and platinum. Why not gold?
Well, platinum is even more expensive than gold,
Oh. Even
more valuable than gold. And so our time is our most valuable resource. And if we value our time as the most highest,
okay,
then we will not give it away so easily. You know, most people give away their time easily for, you know, in comparison to the wealthy, a pittance of money.
Mm-hmm.
The wealthy, you know, consider their time to be the most precious resource. And they will get other people to work for them in order to create wealth. I mean, I give you the analogy of, you know, Bill Gates when he went to work at Microsoft. You know, I'll ask people, did he go to the packing department to pack the software to make sure it got to all the stores on time? And I said, well, no, of course not, right? Well, why not? Well, because he had other people that did that for him. He had a team of people that would do that so that he didn't have to work in his business. He worked on his business. He had nothing to do with the day-to-day operations at Microsoft. What he focused on was the future. And he had a mission, a vision, and a purpose for Microsoft so that now Microsoft works without him. It doesn't need him to be there. Never did, really. He duplicated himself. He had duplicated systems within his organization, which freed him up to do what he really wanted to do. And now he's going to spend the rest of his life not making money, but giving money away. And as I explained to people, that is the future of our children. Our children will look back on this time and say, can you believe that our parents or grandparents actually had to worry about making money? How awful must that have been? And that sounds like a crazy thing, but, you know, just as when you go and buy a car today, you can go and buy a Toyota Camry and it can have a button in it that you can press that will start the engine. 5 years ago, that was only on a Bentley. And today, we have people like Bill Gates. We have people like Warren Buffett. People like Paul Newman, who recently passed away, that have given away hundreds of millions of dollars in this lifetime. That is the future of our children. Our children are going to retake back the power and be able to change the world by being able to learn the principles of wealth and making money work for us. And it might sound crazy to say that, but 100 years ago, if you'd have told people that we would be doing what we are doing today, they would never have believed you. And the difference is that we're doing what it used to take 100 years to do, and sometimes in a matter of a few years. So the speed and acceleration of what is going to happen in the upcoming years is quite dramatic. And what we're seeing right now is the old systems are failing, they're breaking down, and new systems are emerging, which is going to create a better tomorrow for ourselves and our children.
Well, certainly that is part of what this program is all about. New Paradigms for a New World here on Tell Me Your Stories. We're trying to give people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true, whether it be that they want a Bentley with a push-button starter or or a bigger house for their family, or they want to be philanthropic in that regard. And I have to say that there are some messages that we have been given, myself included, that I kind of want to have you address, and maybe this might be a good road to go down as far as helping people to better understand, maybe not so much where those messages came from, but how to release those messages for some new ones that are contained in your book, Quantum Wealth. And the first one, now you mentioned one, of course, you know, what is money, the root of all evil. And, you know, that throws me right back to my childhood as far as Catholic Church and catechism and then working for 15 years in Christian broadcasting. I heard some great messages about money there. Cast your bread upon the water and it will return to you a thousandfold. And I mean, and the list goes on of all of these phrases, these catch slogans. But it never seemed to work for those people who were listening to them, and it was extremely frustrating. So let's talk a little bit about, I don't know if we should use the analogy of changing tracks on a rail, but that's what comes to mind. How do we go about doing just that so that we're not constantly going uphill, that maybe we can find the flatlands or even start going downhill?
Yeah, great question.
And that's, and I say downhill and that in a very positive way, where we're not working as hard. We're allowing, you talked about 1%, you quoted the gentleman about saying about 1% of 100 people versus 100% of myself going downhill. You're now letting gravity propel you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And the principle that I'm talking about there, and John Paul Getty was talking about there, is leverage. Archimedes once said, "Give me a stick and I will move the world, or give me a rock to stand and I'll move the world." In other words, you can, if you leverage, use the power of leverage, you can move tremendous amounts of energy. And this is a principle that has been, you know, not taught to the middle class and the poor, because they, you know, the industrialists, the wealthy needed a workforce, which is why they send them to different schools. It's not because of the school lunch, it's because they're going to be, you know, taught different principles to live a different life. So the good news is that as the consciousness has evolved, we have slowly but surely said, you know, that's not what we want. What we want is freedom. And in order to be free, we have to be entrepreneurial. We have to, and what is, you know, entrepreneurial is tapping into your own unique creative spirit and expressing it through a particular vehicle of your choosing, something you feel passionate about. So how do you begin to generate more wealth in your life is by not focusing on necessarily creating more wealth, but focusing on what is your mission, vision, and purpose for your life. What is the legacy you want to leave? What does it look like? We've got to be able to see it. You know, we live in a world of dreams. And most people are living somebody else's dream. You know, what I mean by that is everything on the face of the earth, everything that you can perceive began as a thought in the mind of somebody. It began in somebody else's imagination. Image, mm-hmm. nation. Mm-hmm. We live in a nation of images that have been seen in the minds of somebody else, then taken from the mind, from the thought, to word, to action, to creation. So we're all creative beings. We all have the ability to create the life of our choosing. We're doing that either consciously or unconsciously. And the analogy I use, a simple analogy I use sometimes at my event is I'll say, you know, two people came to this event this morning. One person walks in and they're saying to themselves, oh, look at all these other people here in this room. Oh, strangers, doesn't look very nice. Coffee's not from Starbucks, or, you know, finding fault with the room.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else walks in the room and they walk in the room and say, oh, look at all these great people here. I'm going to meet new friends. I'm going to learn some new things that can help me get closer to living the life of my dreams. You know, what's the difference between the two people? You know, well, it's what they're thinking, what they're saying, and then what they're doing in response to those things. And that obviously is going to impact their experience of being in that room for however long they're there. People say, yeah, okay, I get that. And then I say, well, look, the point of the matter is we're all in the same room.
Yeah, Yeah,
we're all on the same planet. Mm-hmm. We're on the same planet. What we think, what we say, and what we do in response to our experience creates our experience of it. So if we start to live a sense of mission, you know, why am I here? I don't mean, you know, why am I on this radio show? Why am I in this room? Why are you here on this planet at this time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it you've come here to do? What is it you come here, what legacy have you come here to leave behind?
Right.
And then you can just be that. And when you're being that, you don't have any sense of, well, am I going to make any money at it? Am I going to, you know, am I going to lose everything I have? Because people get afraid to go for their dreams because they're trying to hang on to what they already have. And there's a, you know, there's a great quote. It says, you must be prepared. If you're going to look for new oceans, you must be prepared to lose sight of the shore. And most people are so afraid to lose what they already have that they're too afraid to go for their dreams. And here's the greatest, the test of all is when you find your dream and you go for your dream, you don't have any fear of not getting it. You just got to go for it.
Yeah.
And that's living in faith. And when you live in faith, then you become free.
I've shared the example many times on this program over the last almost, as I said before, 4 years. Back in 2006, when we were told at the radio station I was working for that the station had been sold and the new management and ownership were going to change the formats and nobody was being kept. And so we were told this is your departure date, February 28th. And the March 1st rolled around and my wife calls me and says, I just quit my job. And I'm sitting there on the phone screaming in my head going, and do you understand that I'm unemployed too? Well, that evening we're sitting at the TV and she comes over, sits down next to me on the couch and she says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on a precipice. What do we do? Now, there's only one other time in my life that I can remember being in a place where I should have been scared out of my mind. That other place was in Ireland on one of the Aran Islands, Inishmore. I was sitting literally on the edge of a granite slab in a primitive fort, and my feet were dangling over the Atlantic, and I was taking pictures. And, of course, my wife saying, and where did you say the life insurance policy was? I had absolutely no fear at that moment, any more than I had that evening when she asked me that question. Now, my response to her that evening was, of all of the books I've read and all of the interviews I've done with these people and the workshops and the seminars and the personal growth programs that I've ever been through, everybody says the same thing. When you come to the edge of a precipice or cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust. And as I said before, I had absolutely no fear whatsoever at that time. And I have never regretted, I've never looked back and said, oh, gee, I don't know if we should have done that. Well, here I am today talking with you about this subject. Now, on the other hand, going back to the example of sitting on the edge of that granite slab in Ireland, it was 8 hours later. I'm laying cozy and warm and snug in my bed in the cottage that we were renting on our little vacation, and I was at that moment scared out of my mind. And I was like, wait a minute. You're lying here safe and warm in your bed. How are you going to fall off that granite slab now? Why are you afraid? But that's what we do. We become afraid for reasons that make absolutely no sense.
That's right. That's right. We live in an insane society that we think is sane because it's what we're conditioned to believe is sane.
Yeah. Let me ask you about two what I perceive of our opposing beliefs. On the one hand, we have people who come here from other countries and they become citizens, and they come over here uttering the words, if you will, and I say this in a general sense, uttering the words that they have heard, that this is the land of opportunity. You can do anything you want in the United States of America. And many immigrants have done just that. One of the thoughts on that several years ago was, well, wait a minute. Why is that phrase any different for me, a person who was born here, than it is for the immigrant who comes through Ellis Island or becomes a naturalized citizen on the 4th of July or whatever the case may be? But you have that concept weighed against a system, a governmental system and a process we call the IRS, that says that because you make so many millions of dollars, you're not in the middle class, you're in the upper class, we're going to tax you more. And some people say, well, then what's the point of becoming wealthy? What's the point of doing just what we're kind of talking about? That's part of what we're talking about. But what's the point of succeeding if somebody else out there is going to just take it away from me? So you have almost two diametrically opposed concepts going there. Can you maybe elaborate a little on that?
Yeah. To go back to as far as the tax situation is concerned, there's a great book. It's called A Fair Tax, which I'm sure many of the listeners have read. It's a really good book that explains how the tax system works and what would be a better system.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually talked about in Washington now. It's being talked about. And it makes a lot of sense. The current system that we have is nonsensical. It penalizes mostly the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep it the way it is being, we're never going to get the country on its feet. So we have to radically change the tax system. The other question, the preceding that, there was something, and I can't remember exactly what it was.
It has to do with the fact that this is the land of opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I came over here from the UK. Obviously, most people can realize I'm not from California or China. And the thing that was really helpful to me was the fact that there was no entitlement. If I didn't make it, I was going to be on the next boat back to England.
Right.
So here in America, we have an entitlement mentality where people think that they're entitled to certain things or they're going to get certain things. And as long as we have that, we're not going to take responsibility and accountability for our lives. So, you know, when I came over here, I put everything I had on the line for my dream to come and live in this country.
Okay.
And what I learned from that is that the moment you put everything you have on the line for your dream, you just succeeded, because that's when providence comes to meet you. You know, I believe in a higher power. I think to think that, you know, there isn't some omnipotent, omnipresent higher power that has created everything that we see and even that we don't see would be like saying that, you know, a dictionary is the result of an explosion in a book factory. Something is here in this world, and it's trying to communicate with us. And I say, trying to communicate with us.
Yeah.
It's trying to help us to realize that if we fear things, we're going to create what we fear. Once we live in faith, and what I mean by faith is acknowledging that higher power, knowing that higher power is not separate from you, is a part of you, it's connected to you. And when you trust in that and you start to tap into that inner guidance, what I call it as intuition, when we start to connect more with the feelings, that inner guidance system, we're being guided in the right direction. And that way you don't have to worry about the future. You don't have to stress about the past. You can be in the present. You can live in the now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can live in the present.
Right.
And then you can just enjoy it, and you can be who you really are, express from that place, and you don't have to worry about the future. So, that would be, my answer is you've got to let go of fear. You've got to let go of the fear, and you've got to let go. We have to let go of thinking that, you know, we're entitled to something and not being accountable and responsible for our lives. And again, social conditioning is, you know, it's not your fault, or you don't have to be responsible for that. That's the government's job. That's the police department's
right.
job. That's this person's job.
Mm-hmm.
We're not responsible for that because we pay our taxes. Well, you get out of every area of life what you put into it. You know, and the Fair Tax book that I was talking about, by the way, is by Neil Bortz. John Linder.
Talk show host, Neil Bortz. Yes,
yeah.
Familiar
yeah.
with him.
Yeah. yeah.
We're talking with Stephen Edwards, author of Quantum Wealth, The 7 Secrets to Peace and Prosperity. We'll talk more about that as we continue. I'm Richard Duke, and this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Quantum Wealth, that's what we're talking about here on the program, The 7 Secrets to Peace and Prosperity. And I'm Richard Duke, your host. My guest is Stephen Edwards, and we are discussing this whole aspect in terms of, you know, I've heard it said that money will not make you happy. I've also heard it said by a wonderful, he's sort of a satirist. He's a gentleman here in Santa Barbara who writes all these wonderful little quotes that you see in the Santa Barbara News Press. And one of them, he gave me the card for this, and one of them actually says, they say that money won't make you $1 million won't make you happy. I would just like the opportunity to try, was the line in that one. And we all feel that way. And yet, statistics show, and I want to kind of go off on in this direction and then start talking a little bit more about the seven secrets to peace and prosperity. Statistics bear this out, that an individual who wins a huge jackpot in the lottery, unless he or she changes their mindset, changes their perspective on what they now have, they will be exactly in the same spot financially a year or two or 3 years down the road as they were before they won the lottery, before they received this giant windfall. Is that a fair statement, that unless we begin to rise above those messages that we talked about in our last segment together, we will always be, we'll bring in those funds that we think are going to make us happy, that are going to provide us with peace and prosperity, only to realize that it just slips right through our fingers because we haven't learned the necessary lessons, or if you will, discovered the secrets to holding on to it, as well as to sharing it with others.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, psychologists tell us that if you were to take all the money in the world as where it is today, mm-hmm. and you were to divide it equally amongst all the population of the world, it would be back exactly where it is today in less than 2 years.
Wow!
Because of the people, it's really the amount of money you have in your life is a direct correlation to the belief systems you have, what your thoughts are, the things you say, and the things you do in regard to money. It's all it is. And you change those things, and you'll change the results. If we, you know, most people have not been taught to make money a part of their life. You know, so people don't study it. People don't study wealth. They don't study finances. You know, and it's not taught in our schools. Think about that. How can money, which is one of the things that we deal with every day of our lives, not be taught in our educational system? How does that make any sense? Because it sets people up to be taken advantage of by the people who do understand those principles. And unfortunately, we live in a system today where our economic system, our monetary system, as it were, is not a, first of all, it's not a monetary system, it's a currency system.
Mm-hmm.
So the money's just printed. It has no value.
Right.
We're fortunate that the world currency is the U.S. dollar. So every other country in the world, if they want to buy any oil, which they have to buy U.S. dollars. So we have a currency that does have value in the eyes of the world because they have to buy it. Also, here in the United States, the only way that we can really make money or have our money have value is if people borrow it and pay more back. They pay it back with interest. And so that's why the banking system and the credit system is so powerful in the United States. There is a very limited amount of power that the U.S. government has over the banking and the credit system because our system cannot work without them. So they're pretty much allowed to do what they want within a certain, you know, certain, in other words, they're only allowed to rip you off so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they are the ones that are in control. And, you know, we think that, you know, we're about to go into a presidential run here, you know, another election, and people are fighting over whether it's going to be the Democrats and the Republicans. And the bottom line is, it makes no difference.
Right.
It makes no real difference. And people will, you know, go crazy when I say that.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, the banking system supports both sides. And
yeah.
They're the ones that control the money supply.
Well, you know, and I've often asked people, take a look back. In my short life of 50 years, I'll go back an additional 10 years, and I'll say, in 60 years of politics and the changing of the guard from left to right to left to right to left, is the common man, we'll call him the middle class for lack of a better term, any better off today than he was 60 years ago? And I think that most people would say no. He's
on the
more
other side of that as well, Richard. You could say, you know, have the wealthy consistently got better off, no matter whether it's a Republican or a Democratic presidency? And the answer is they consistently, regardless of either one, become better off.
Yeah. So it's like we do actually have two classes. Some might say three because they'll put the poor in that category as the third class. But the poor or middle class, they all feel that those two groups combined to one, they all feel disenfranchised.
Yeah, and those two classes are becoming one. We are moving from a three-class society to a two-class society. And right now, whether they realize it consciously or not, the middle class are making a decision as to which one of those two areas they're going to move to. And unfortunately, you can't go from the middle class into the wealthy without a change in your thoughts, your words, and your actions around money.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to become poor, and that's what's happening. We're having this dichotomy. And why is that happening? Well, it's happening for two reasons. One reason is because the middle class are asking for it. Ask and you shall receive. In other words, they're saying, I don't want to work anymore. I don't want to have to feel like I'm giving up my time for a pittance of money. I don't want to feel like I've got to work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and then come home at the weekend and just be so exhausted all I can do is watch a mindless television so I can go back out and do it again.
Right.
So we're asking for it. And the other reason is because we've asked for it, the jobs are going to other countries. Because people are saying, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
So they're pushing these jobs away, and they're going to other countries. And the technology is coming in to replace those jobs because we've asked for it.
Yeah.
And so people are having the opportunity to experience the freedom they're asking for. The problem is, again, people are saying, why is this happening to me, instead of realizing they're asking for it and taking the opportunities that have come about as a result of their asking for it. There are so many opportunities now for people to start their own business. Build a website and have a global business overnight.
Yeah.
But most people are still hanging on to, this is the way it's always been. I always had a job, and I got to, get a job, and you got to be safe, and you got to be secure. Those days are over. We're moving from a working-class society to an entrepreneurial society, and it's an entrepreneurial revolution that we're seeing right now.
Obviously, there are people out there who don't care what the red tape is or what the hoops that they have to go through. They move forward, and they make those kinds of things happen. But then there are others who, I'll give you my own personal example. I just finished the first draft of a book, and it's not a big book. It's nothing by comparison to yours, which I will let people know that it is a very thick book, but it is nice large text, and I don't need a magnifying glass to read it. Thank you, Stephen. But I started to go through the process. Do I self-publish or do I try to find a publisher? And then I start looking at the steps that I have to go through in order to get this thing through the proper channels to get it marketed and get it out there so people will buy it so I can start making more money. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll just go to a local printer who does a great job with the work that I've had him do on other projects that I've had, have him print up 100, I'll pay him, and then I'll just distribute the darn thing myself. And if it picks up, it picks up. If it doesn't, no big deal. Not a huge investment. And some people have been helped with it. So doing a limited printing like that. What about that? And I'm not speaking specifically about publishing books, mind you. But in terms of feeling as though, yeah, I really want to do that, Stephen. That sounds great, great idea. I'm feeling entrepreneurial. But the system just seems like it's so against me.
Well, first of all, I think, it's, again, it's about, is it something you want to do?
Yeah.
If it's something you're passionate about, then, absolutely get 100 printed, go out, talk to people about it. If you're passionate about it, you'll tell other people about it. If they enjoy it, they'll tell other people about it, and it will snowball from there. That's how all great things happen. It's how all great ideas come to the forefront. Having a publisher publish it is not going to market it for you the way you would market it anyway. You still have to do that.
Right.
So you may as well just self-publish and then go and, you could go to bookstores and talk. You could talk at all kinds of events and venues. There's all kinds of ways that you can market your book. And if you're passionate about it, you'll find those things and you'll find your way.
Yeah.
There are books you can read about self-publishing. You'll find those things, won't you? You'll just start to become aware of them.
Right.
And you'll Google it. The information is out there now. There's no reason why we can't do whatever we want to do. We just need to do it for the right reason.
Right. And I think something else that you said, and I've shared this thought and concept with others as well, and that is having to do with listening to your intuition, listening to that still small voice, heeding the prompting that you were giving, as I like to put it. And I was talking with someone not too long ago about all of this, and I said, I want to tell you that if you do listen to that, and we'll just use the term still small voice, I can guarantee you, this is not, I do not believe this, I know it, that that voice will never, ever, ever lead you in the wrong direction.
Right.
It will never. Plus the fact that the biggest bonus that you mentioned earlier in the program is, you guess where you get to live? In the now, which is where all great things happen. Some other great things that are contained in this book are the seven secrets. And I'm going to run through a couple of these and have you maybe elucidate a little bit before we run out of time here. The truth is not afraid to be questioned.
Right.
Now, what do you mean by truth?
That's a good question. Yeah. There are certain principles like, gravity.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, well, I'm positive. I'm going to jump off the edge of this cliff, and I'm just going to be positive that I'm going to fly. Well, the bottom line is you can be as positive as you want, but if you jump off the end of the cliff, the gravity's going to hit you, and it's going to pull you down.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain principles that govern the experience, the reality that we live in. And so those principles are not afraid to be questioned. But many of us are afraid to question those things because they're things that we've been taught since we were small, since we were children, and we're afraid to question them because if we question them and they're not true, it creates uncertainty in our lives.
Like money is the root of all evil.
Exactly. Like money is the root of all evil.
Okay.
Like, that higher power, whatever name we give that higher power, we just don't question it. Well, if the higher power is omnipotent, omnipresent. Is all powerful. Do you think he's really afraid to be questioned? The truth wants you to question it.
Yeah.
Because the truth knows that only by answering your questions can the truth remove all your doubt. And unless your doubt is removed, you live in fear.
You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Yeah, I use that phrase. The truth will set you free, but first it will tick you off.
Yes, it will.
Because the truth is not necessarily what we've thought it was or we believe it is.
Now, there's an interesting thing about the truth as we question it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you are given the answer, once you take responsibility for both the question and the answer in your own life, guess what? Down the road, when you're faced with that again, you know it. You can't. You cannot. What's the phrase I want? You cannot plead ignorance. Because
a mind expanded to new dimensions can never go back to its original dimension.
Exactly right. I had a boss, as shifting to one of your other secrets here, I had a boss who believed in the law of diminishing returns, which from my understanding was don't put out more effort on a job than you expect to get back. And I had a few projects that clients came in, they wanted to have done, and then they became advertisers, but they didn't stay long, but I still completed their project. And so my boss always told me, says, you know, the law of diminishing returns, I say that to refer to secret number three, you must do less in order to have more. Now that's different from the law of diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how.
Well, if you are working hard, then you're tending to do it yourself. And so it goes back to the power of leverage again. You've got to involve other people in your mission, vision, and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it on your own. But we've been taught, most of us have been taught, if you want the job done, you got to do it yourself.
Right.
The harder you work, the more money you're going to make. All these things that cause us to do more and have less.
Okay.
So in order to have more, we've got to do less. We've got to get other people involved. We've got to have other people be part of our mission, vision, and purpose. And we've got to have the help of the people. If all we needed was ourselves, we'd be the only one here.
Okay. But that doesn't mean that they have to have our mission, vision, and purpose.
Nope.
It is true that only we have that. But you're talking about others who have their own vision, mission, and purpose that, like two cogwheels coming together, the sprockets, they fit together because their vision, mission, and purpose works coincidently with ours.
Yeah, I call it MVP. M for mission, V for vision, V for purpose. Because we all want to live an MVP life.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be a most valuable player. Well, to do that, we've got to have a mission, a vision, a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. Here's the thing. we have a perfect jigsaw puzzle. Unfortunately, the jigsaw puzzle is all mixed up because people have been taught they've got to follow somebody else's rules. They've got to conform to being a certain way in the world instead of being who they are. And once we are really being, overall being who we really are, we all fit together like a perfect jigsaw puzzle. Even if some of us are doing or saying the same thing. Like, you can go into a bookstore and you can look at books. You can look one by Wayne Dyer or Deepak Chopra or Barbara DeAngelo. All these different people are writing all these books, but they're all saying the same thing. But they're all saying it in their own unique way. And there are going to be people that are going to be attracted to their style of writing, their energy, that will not be attracted to somebody else's. Somebody said, you know, I don't really like Wayne Dyer, but I love Deepak Chopra. And people might say, well, you know what, I like them both. Or, you know, I don't like those two. There's plenty for everybody. And when we're living our own mission, vision, and purpose, and we're being who we really are, we all fit together like a perfect jigsaw puzzle, and there's plenty for everybody. We've all been led to believe there's not enough.
Yeah.
Well, if somebody else is doing it, then why would I do it? Because someone is already doing it. Well, they're not doing it like you would do it.
And it's interesting, the mind games that we play with ourselves, because I've been seeing different books of varying sizes and lengths that seem like they talk about the very things that my book talks about. And again, mine is more mine's more of a pamphlet. It's only 20, 30 pages, but nonetheless. And it's like the mind games start going, well, I don't need to release my book because this person's already written the kind of kinda the same thing. But it's not. It's mine.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And there'll be people that will pick that up that would never have picked up the other book that somebody else wrote.
Yeah. This is fascinating. I'm curious also, who inspires you?
Oh, so many people. I mean, you know, I'm inspired by you and what you're doing and the things you're saying. I think we inspire each other. You know, I think we all learn from each other. When I go to my events, I'm inspired by the stories of people that come. You know, we've all got a book in us. We're all inspiring people. When you think about what people go through every day in their lives, we're all extraordinary. Some of the people that stand out for me, you know, I worked with Tony Robbins for 3.5 years. You know, and I learned some tremendous things. And through him, I met people like Wayne Dyer and studied Deepak Chopra and people like that. So yeah, there's so many people. I mean, and then there's people in the financial world that have been very inspirational to me. So I have many mentors, some of that I know personally and have worked with personally, some that I've just read through books and audio programs. But I'm inspired by a lot of people. I'm an avid reader. I'm an avid learner. I'm always trying to expand my mind. I look into and delve into science, finances, spirituality. I got a PhD in spiritual counseling. I study health and nutrition. I'm passionate about all these subjects. I love to learn, which is ironic because I hated going to school. my mom still tells the story of the day. The first day she dropped me off at school and she left me down in the morning. She picked me up at lunchtime. She came to take me home for lunch so that I had a little bit of a break. And, you know, I wasn't at school on my own all day. And then she picked me up at lunchtime, and I'm so angry at her for leaving me at this terrible place. You know, I'm walking slowly behind her. I'm dawdling. And she turned around and said to me, "Stephen, now come on. We've got to get you home so you can get your lunch so we can get you back for this afternoon." I stopped dead in my tracks. I looked right at her, and I said, "Back? I've been once. I'm not going again." You know, it's funny that some of the times the things that we think we would never do end up being the things that we become most passionate about.
My father turns 80 in 2 months.
Wow.
And one of the best pieces of advice that he ever gave me, I've shared this countless times. Among other things that he shared with me, advice as it were, this probably was the best. And I almost started the program with this, but I think I'll end it with this. He told me, he says, "Be sure that you find a job that you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck," he said, "because I did." Well, he got himself unstuck because he went to junior college and studied computer programming and so forth. And I got to tell you, Stephen, that I love doing this. And I have to say that I felt like I've been in the right place at the right time most all of my life, especially the last 32 years. With what we're doing with this program, with what I've done over the years, it's just extraordinary stuff. So my hat's off to my father for all that he has given me, and to that end, a happy Father's Day to him on this weekend. And I thank you so much for joining us on the program and sharing the Quantum Wealth, the 7 Secrets to Peace and Prosperity.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Richard. And yeah, happy Father's Day to everybody, all the fathers out there as well, and to my dad. Same thing. I feel the same way. He's very inspirational to me as well.
And it's funny how we don't always realize that when we're growing up, you know?
Absolutely not.
But again, I thank you so much. And I look forward to having you back on the program. Have you anything in the works here for the future?
I do have an event coming up in Las Vegas in November that I'd like to make people aware of. And if anybody would like to join us there, it's an extraordinary 4-day event, which is all about quantum wealth, really tapping into the wealth within us. And then we give people some remarkable tools to go out in the world and generate tremendous wealth as well. And we have some extraordinary things that happen there. And it's usually $1,995, but what we'll do for any of your listeners that want to come and join us in Las Vegas, then it's $495, and you can bring a guest. So that's a special for everybody listening to the show who lets us know by the end of June that they want to come. We'll give them a place there, and we'd love to have them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Well, folks, check it out. Go to myquantumwealth.com. That's myquantumwealth.com. Find out more and register for the seminar, the workshop in Las Vegas in November. Let them know you heard about it here on the program. And oh my God, that's, what is it? One quarter. That's 75% off, it sounds like, if my math is correct.
That's right.
Again, Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And until next Saturday, love to all.